And welcome everyone to a special launch episode of Slater Pod. Today we're going to launch an AI feature called Slater Answers, and we're going to walk you through how it works and what it does. But before that, Esther, what else is on the agenda?
On the agenda today, we have the most common words found in LSP names. We have Google's stream of updates around large language models and machine translation. Also, we're going to be talking about YouTube's multi-track audio, which is going into music, and mergers and acquisitions, or acquisition rather, in media localization.
Great. But first, let me bring up and introduce it to Diego Bartolome, who's joining us from where exactly in the world, Diego?
From Barcelona, Spain.
Barcelona, Spain. Perfect. So Diego is an industry veteran in the language tech space, CTO of Language.io, worked for Microsoft, was the director of AI for Transperfect, and of course, the CEO and founder of TaoYu, and now founder of Synthetic AI, which is where you come in for Slater Answers. So what we wanted to do at Slater is when this whole kind of generative AI and chat GPT, craze started, that we wanted to make our content, kind of including, research, podcast transcript, and our, thousands of articles available for natural language querying, prompting, questioning to our subscribers. So growth, pro, enterprise, et cetera. So it's kind of like ChatGPT trained on our specific Slater content. So when we wanted to do that, we connect with Diego, and Diego helped us build something very exciting. But before we go into the feature itself, just tell us a bit more about Synthetic and what your plans are for the startup.
Yeah, so I created the startup a few months ago after leaving Language.io. And essentially what we do are three things. One is content generation, mostly for e-commerce. It's a big need now. Then we're doing this generative question answering over your specific documents, which can be applied in research, but also in other areas such as healthcare, financial, or legal information. And then finally, we are also developing the new generation of chatbots using very similar technology to this.
Great. And so when we connected and kind of we described the goal for Slater Answers, how did you go about, looking at this, narrowing this down, making it actually practical in like a live website setting and then implementing it?
Yeah, it has been a journey, as you know. So essentially, what we have done is a few things. One is indexing the content. So we are basically indexing semantically the content from the blog posts, pods, and reports that you generate. And then we make that available in an easy way through a generative question answering system, which essentially finds the best content for your question, and then it develops a generative answer based on that context. So if you ask something that it doesn't know about, it should reply, "I don't know," or "This is not available." And if not, it will create the best answer based on what you have written in the past.
What was particularly tricky about this? I mean, like you describe it very kind of easy and kind of straightforward, but like maybe can you disclose a bit what the layers are here? Like what type of tech you're relying on? What are you building like on your own, and what you're maybe plugging into via some type of API out there?
The preparation of the backend, let's say, of everything, how we index the data, preprocess the data, and prepare the data to be queried. That's coming from us. We're leveraging open source models for the embedding. So it's basically how the data is indexed. And then for the actual question answering based on the context, we're leveraging a publicly available API, OpenAI in this particular case, to generate that generative answer. But we are starting to train our own model for that. So in the near future, we would expect something proprietary as well, so that the solution, we have more control over the solution.
And so that will be quite tricky to do, doing a proprietary solution for this, or is it just a matter of time and kind of tweaking this a little bit?
It's a matter of time. Actually, the more we intend to do this for every customer we have, so essentially for Slater, for instance, based on the questions and answers we're giving, your customers are asking, we will be able to generate a model specific for you, for your specific data. And that's the goal. We are not looking to have one generic model for all of our customers, but rather focus on narrow scenarios and narrow use cases. And for that, we need examples. We need people asking questions, and we will be curating them and making sure we can train a model in the near future, in the, I would say, weeks from now.
Very exciting. So why don't we give it a try? So for those that watch this on YouTube, I'm putting on the share button here, and then I'll read it for those that listen to it. So let's go to our website. You go to Slater Answers. You got to be logged in and be a subscriber. And so there you go. We have Slater Answers, language industry, artificial intelligence. You know, our claim is language industry intelligence. Now it's language industry, artificial intelligence. And then we got this box here, ask me anything. So why don't we ask it, for example, how do TMS integrate machine translation? And I'm kind of specifically not fully fleshing this out and ask like, how do translation management systems integrate, but just how do TMS integrate machine translation? Hit the button, and then it says, well, we're hard at work generating your answer. Please stand by. How long does it typically take for like a prompt to come back?
It depends. You saw it here a few seconds. Essentially, we are gathering the sources. That's quite fast, actually. And then based on the complexity of the question, it might take longer or shorter. So if it's a more direct question, it goes faster. If it's a more elaborated one, it takes a little bit longer.
This one was quite good. I mean, look at this. So it generated the answer. TMS typically integrate machine translation engines, usually third-party ones, to enable partial or full automation of a translation task. The TMS leverages previously translated content and provides access to MT engines through its platform. The MT engines are customized according to customer requirements and can be used alongside other translation productivity tools such as translation memory, glossaries, and linguistic quality assurance tools. Well, so far so good. And then it also tells you about the sources. So it says view sources and you can click on it. And then the most recent one it pulls up would be our, well, thank you, our 2023 language industry market report, kind of cites the 2022 market report, and then cites, interesting, it cites a 2021 article where LangueageWire was acquired by a private equity firm. So maybe we talked about TMSs in there as well. Very interesting.
Yeah, one of the things we have done is sorting the content based on the date. So you get the most recent content first, and then we give here five sources. It can be more or less depending on the on what we want, but for now it's five.
Great. And I mean, for us, maybe one complication less is that we're only publishing in English. Would it be super hard if it was like in, you know, three or four languages, or wouldn't matter that much actually?
No, in fact, we're improving that, because if you ask, for instance, in German or in Spanish, it would answer. The sources will be in English as well, but we are trying to improve the quality of the answers, because in some cases, it's not at the level of the actual content. So we need to improve that.
Oh, you're saying that if I asked it, I haven't even tried this. If I asked this in German, it would actually give me a response?
Yeah, typically it gives a response.
Basically, I'm asking it, how exactly does machine translation work in German? I mean, wie genau funktioniert maschinelle Übersetzen? Let's see what it does. It's again hard at work, asking us to stand by. Maybe now it's going to take a couple of seconds longer. Let's take a detour.
The machine is thinking. The sources will be shown in English anyways, and the answer should be in German.
Oh, that's incredible.
There you are.
It's giving me an answer in German. And I mean, I'm not going to read it, but it makes sense. It's really well done. And the sources are like the Bell articles we published and Tech Shuttle articles. Incredible.
One of the things we could do here is the sources, since they are in English, I mean, getting them machine translated if someone is actually interested. But since in our industry, everyone knows English.
Yeah. And I mean, since I prompted it in German, I kind of implying that I wanted the output in German as well. All right. That concludes the quick test and sharing here. So who do you see as kind of key clients for a solution like that? Like we're, you know, we're an information business, a publisher, a research company, an advisory firm. Like, do you see this as, would we be at the very small end of the scale in terms of potential clients? And you would see like this being mostly an enterprise kind of information issue, or how do you see the market here shaping up?
Basically, these type of systems are needed by many companies across areas, right? So you could think about this as a business unit specific solution. We have a customer, for instance, creating content and managing social media for customers that is using a very similar technology to provide the answers to the community managers. It's very hard sometimes to go to the corporations and ask them for the answers. So we index the content and they can get the answer. And we have very good use cases in healthcare as well for research, trying to find relevant content and links among articles, for instance, or about, if you think about adverse events for healthcare or pharma companies, this could be another option. We have seen also a big push in financial information. That's quite interesting. But I say that the use cases are basically infinite for this.
Absolutely. Well, Diego, thanks so much for taking the time today and introducing this. We're going to launch it today, Thursday. Of course, tomorrow when the podcast's out, people will have started to test it already. And it's, you know, it's not an alpha version, but it's maybe like beta plus at this point. So we're really looking to gather a lot of feedback and improve it over time. So thanks so much.
Thanks to you.
Thanks, Diego.
All right. So that was Synthetic. Everyone, Synthetic, no H, Synthetic, .ai with Diego. That was really cool. We didn't actually test the German prompt and it worked.
Yeah, that's good.
It's good. It works. So we had a quick chat with him after that. And then basically, like, how does it even work multilingually? And I think it's a complicated topic for another day. Now, another complicated topic is when you start a company, what's your name? And we did do a quick kind of fun tongue-in-cheek type of analysis in our 2023 market report about this topic. Tell us more about that, Esther.
Yeah, there's a nice graphic in the market report, as you said. We did an analysis of company names in the language industries. This is based on companies in the Slater language service provider for 2023, so roughly 350 LSPs. We looked at their names. We worked out the top terms, some trends, some themes. And a preference for full transparency apparently is what we found overall, an overarching theme, which I suppose just means it does what it says on the tin, you know.
Yeah, our favorite podcast thing.
Yeah, so I mean, it's all presented in a word cloud in the report. The bigger the bubble, the more common the term among these LSPs. So I'll just pull out a few bits of a few data points, bits of information about what we found. The top three terms among LSPs are language, translations, and service. I feel like, you know, I was getting ready for the big reveal, but actually, you know, not that surprising. As we said, fairly transparent names in terms of what they're aiming to do. Yep. So those are the three top terms. Others, some other good terms or other common terms in LSP names, unsurprisingly, maybe translation, solutions, global, international, translate, media, languages, and text. And I wonder how many LSP names you could form just out of those.
Many. Translate media. You just said it.
There's one right next to each other. Yeah, global solutions, I think.
Lingo? Is Lingo in there somewhere?
Lingo, I think, is in there, but it's not among the bigger bubbles, I think. Lingo is sort of mid-sized, along with multilingual, lingua, and com.
Language translation services. That would be kind of the best slash worst name if you could, like, own this, occupy the domain. Yeah, it's a long domain name.
LTS.
So, yeah, now we should bring on a brand expert to tell us, do you want to be right in the middle of what people expect? Is that good for lead generation, or do you want to be very different, right?
Strike a balance.
Global language translation service. All right, let's move on. I like the word cloud. Head over to the article. We actually, that's not just in the report. That's in the article as well. We copy-pasted that Yeah, that word cloud. Let's move on. Google is like on a publication tear in terms of the LLMs, obviously trying to get back the, well, I mean, AI has, OpenAI has, of course, kind of captured everyone's imagination slash PR, high ground, etc. But Google's fighting back. We did speak about it, I think, in a podcast ago when they launched. On this conference, launched a bunch of things, but also on the research side, lots of research papers coming out. One of them actually looks at how Palm, like P-A-L-M, capital L, capital M, 2, performs on machine translation. And surprisingly, Google says that it beats Google Translate in machine translation. Now, let me quote from the actual research paper. They say that we observe that Palm 2 improves not only over Palm, but also over Google Translate in all locales. Yeah, that must have kind of maybe ruffled some internal feathers at Google. If, you know, one large language model kind of research group says that, well, the kind of in production system is underperforming this large language model. Very technical, not going to go into detail. It's all, of course, also, they always run these on these WMT translation data sets using human evaluators, et cetera, et cetera. More interestingly, then when we posted it online, on LinkedIn, et cetera, then Konstantin Savinkov, CEO of Intento, basically commented that, well, as of today, Palm blocks all even remotely multilingual requests, saying it's against their safety policy. So, you know, think about it. What we just did with Diego, like you do have to connect to one of these large language models when you want to run an application like, you know, what we just did. Apparently now, maybe if we had connected to Paul, maybe it wouldn't have answered that German question again. So maybe, I don't know where this, what triggered this. I did ask Konstantin, and he says basically he's not the right person to tell us why, because, well, who knows? I don't know why they blocked it. He doesn't know. But long story short, Google coming out there, kind of evaluating large language models against their own in-production system and finding on the quality side that you know, one outperforms the other. Of course, in actual production with something of the volumes of Google Translate, it's a completely different game. You couldn't just run this through one of these large language models. Probably would cost like 20x. But anyway, and then also, this is going to be even harder to summarize. We just a couple of days ago published a post summarizing a paper that we titled that Google explores how large language models actually translate. So how did they actually get this capability? And again, I'm not going to go out on a limb trying to summarize this, but apparently they found that unintentional consumption of bilingual signals helps these models translate. So you have these billions and billions and billions of parameters and train and this huge amount of training data. And then apparently a fraction, like a 1 or 2% of this would be bilingual signals. And based on that, the model acquires the kind of native ability, zero-shot ability to translate. So they said the study found that around 1.4% of Palm, again, Palm's training data, training instances in natural language were bilingual, and 0.34% contained at least one translated pair involving English. And on that, you know, if you have a giant pie, even 0.3% is going to be a fair amount of data, and on that, the model trains. Again, not going to go too much into detail, but really interesting that now we're seeing all of this research out there kind of exploring, well, why do these LLMs get particular capabilities? And of course, one of them is machine translation. And so now we're learning more and more. One model that hit production was Bard, and we tested it. What's going on there, Esther?
Yeah, so a few interesting things. We did a test a couple of weeks ago and then wrote up some of what we experienced. This is Seema, who was playing around with Bard a few weeks ago. Google's large language model.
It's another one. Is it a specific large language model, or do they just call kind of the interface Bard, or do we not know?
I don't know. I mean, we describe it as a large language model. It's definitely an interface whereby, you know, as we just saw with Slate Answers, you can basically plug in questions and get back, in theory, a coherent response.
So it's kind of like Google's ChatGPT answer, right? Which I think it was released back in February, and now it kind of expanded. We don't have access yet in Switzerland, but you guys do in the UK and the US. So sorry, I had to jump in there just to clarify. But yeah, so we made it machine translate.
Yeah, we tried to ask it to machine translate and just did a few tests that would be of interest, I suppose, to people operating in the language industry generally. So one point was that, like I said, initially rolled out in the US and the UK, so it's not in many places at the moment, but it is expanding into 180 current countries and territories, and apparently is on track to soon support 40 languages. It gets a bit complicated when you go into the weeds of it. On the FAQ page, Bard says it's available in US English, in Japanese, and in Korean at the moment, as in you can type questions in those languages and it will understand, respond accordingly. But it's also teaching Bard to speak as many languages as possible. So yeah, Seema did some tinkering around a few weeks ago for the article. I did some more sort of random tests on it today. So I mean, some I suppose anomalous behavior or things that just seem a bit peculiar. You know, you've got things like it declined to translate from Japanese into English, even though saying it speaks Japanese. But I mean, and also saying that it can translate into or between 133 languages. So that was one of the initial questions was, what languages can you translate? And it told us back at the time, I can translate between 133 languages. So obviously then we prompted it to try and do so. But when I asked Bard today, what languages can Bard translate? I just got an error message saying something went wrong. Interestingly, I thought, is that it seems to have slightly different responses if you ask what languages can you translate versus what languages can Bard translate. So for example, I asked it, can you generate subtitles? It said yes, and described how, which is similar to what Seema found a couple of weeks ago. And it had, but when I clicked on the link to the source, it was a blog post about Bard that was not a Google source. It was some other kind of blog post. When I asked it today, can Bard generate subtitles? It responded, I'm a text-based AI, and that is outside of my capabilities. So maybe it doesn't know that it is Bard.
Let's hope it doesn't know that it is Bard. It should not know that it is Bard.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe that's a bit of one of these sort of, you know, us as humans learning to interact with these interfaces and LLMs in terms of prompting, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, to be fair, though, I've tortured ChatGPT quite a lot over the past 4 to 6 weeks, and I never had any of this. I never had any of, like, I'm sorry, or decline, or, like, some, like, things that it said it could do but then didn't do when I wanted it to do it and stuff like that. So looks like a very early launch for Google here.
Yeah, I mean, they are caveating it, saying, you know, it's still experimental and obviously, you know, still developing, still tweaking.
You have an example, like you told me about, like English to French, and then what, it didn't work? Or
no, it did work. So today I tried to translate, I mean, the prompt was translate this from English to French, colon, what day is it today? And it presented what it called a code snippet, and then the reply or the response in French. But then I tried it the opposite way, so saying translate this from French to English, like a back translation, and I got the error message, something went wrong. Bard is still experimental. So I think there's something to do with the languages, like you just typed in German in Slater answers. I think there's something to do with the languages that it will accept as part of the prompts, maybe, versus what it can come up with.
Interesting. I mean, it just seems such a likely often requested thing to do, like work with multiple languages, and then, you know, CEO of school goes on stage, announces it, and like 2 weeks into the launch, we're still like getting these what seem quite basic errors back. Anyway, interesting. Bard, if you can hear this, which you will, because we're going to put this on YouTube, you know, I don't know, it's time to catch up to OpenAI. Another really kind of interesting thing that happened over the past couple of weeks was, remember when we had this Mr. Beast multi-track audio feature story? I mean, or story, launch story, right? So YouTube launched multi-track audio, which means that if you want to have a multilingual audio track, kind of dubbed version of your video, you no longer need to upload multiple videos. But like with Netflix or Disney Plus, you can kind of click a button and then you can select midstream, mid-watching, you can change the language. Huge deal, of course, because you can kind of 5x, 10x your view count by quote unquote just adding a different audio track, a German audio track, a Chinese audio track, Japanese audio track. And they launched this, they kind of quietly launched it for like very influential YouTubers. And so now we stumbled upon this story last week where a K-pop star used it for multi-track audio for music. So I think they, Japanese, Chinese, let me just pull this up, what they did. Originally, of course, it was Korean, and then they did six languages, so English, Japanese, Chinese, Spanish, and Vietnamese. And I think the singer actually sang apparently all six languages, but then they used AI to correct the pronunciation. So kind of you got the style of the singer, and the AI then kind of smoothed it and made it like sound, nice and like, accented free when they sang it. So interesting from a tech point of view, interesting from a cultural point of view. I don't think like most singers would want their songs like in, multiple languages, kind of that the song might be, it's kind of a piece of art, etc. But maybe thousands or hundreds of thousands of YouTubers would want this just to get more views on their songs, right? So very interesting. And I see there's maybe like a really kind of niche market emerging for handling these types of lyrics for very adventurous LSPs that might want to help creators adjust and adapt their songs. Just another interesting multilingual story from YouTube. Now I have another one. I'm gonna have to share it. Sorry, I was about to skip it, but I just stumbled across this today, so you're gonna have to bear with me. So Carvana, I don't know what it is. It's some kind of car buying service in the US or something. So one of their, some person from Carvana posted a video on, I think it was TikTok, but then it came in through Twitter, where like they send like hyper-personalized videos to like 1.3 million people using all kinds of AI tech. So like they, for example, let's say you bought a Hyundai XYZ back in like 2013, right? And then they want to kind of thank you for it. So they send you a video like, hey, remember back in 2013 when X was on top of the charts and when this and this happened in the world of politics, you bought this thing. And then they send you like a video, like an AI generated video with all of these different things. And of course the language was also, it was kind of voice cloned from that person. So one person was able to send out 1.3 million hyper-personalized videos, right? Of course, now let's bring it full circle to the language industry. I mean, you could say, well, it's 1.3 million hyper-personalized videos in English. What about, doing this into 50 languages and running this globally? Will probably involve some type of mild service level on top of this again. So there's all of this crazy stuff kind of coming out now where you really want to be aware of as an LSP and maybe think about how you can, kind of get in there and try to provide some value added service on top. All right, enough of this kind of AI unpacking. Now we're heading over to good old media localization, which, feels very 2020, 2021, streaming boom, Netflix, now it's overtaken by the AI boom. But what's going on there?
Yeah, this is news from Visual Data Media Services in the US that they've acquired EVA Localization. So EVA is a France-based dubbing and accessibility provider. Visual Data had made an initial strategic investment in the company a year ago, and they now own 100% of the company.
That's a big deal.
It's a big deal, yeah. It's sizable. Visual Data already, so prior to the acquisition, they told us for the LSPI that they generated $110 million US dollars in 2022 revenues, and that was growth of more than 45%, 47% from 2021. So obviously on a strong growth trend there as well. They, in 2020, partnered with private equity, a firm called Endeavor Capital, For EVA, smaller but still sizable, actually. So around 36 million in revenues in 2022. That's what they told us for the LSPI as well. Also on a strong growth trend in 2022, up 37% from 2021. So it's a larger US media localization company acquiring a slightly smaller France-based dubbing and accessibility provider. For visual data, that expands their global footprint. So they've got, you know, or EVA comes with dubbing studios in France, Germany, Spain, and apparently into audiobooks and podcasts as sort of new areas, which EVA has been providing. So interesting one. There are a couple of quotes from people in the original press release, I should say. We're still reaching out to them, and hopefully we'll be able to provide our own take on it in the next week or so. So we had Simon Constable, who we actually had him on this podcast, I think back in 2021, and he spoke, and he spoke at SlaterCon on a panel in 2022, together with somebody, this chief commercial officer, Manuel Carreras from EVA. So, you know, they were sitting alongside each other on a panel back then.
We were responsible for this acquisition. That was us. We made the introduction.
I think they'd probably already done the strategic investment by that point, but who knows? So Simon said, we anticipate the need for greater capacity and talent in key markets, and we want to ensure our clients have access to these services when they need them. So yeah, demand is strong.
Demand is indeed strong. I was so torn. Recently, I watched a Dutch, thriller. Wasn't that great, but I was so torn that, like, I mean, I speak zero Dutch. And then I was like, okay, should I watch the dubbed or maybe the subbed with the Dutch? And I was just like back and forth. And I ended up actually watching the subtitle version and just kind of like listening to the Dutch. Because like as a German speaker, you understand like every 2 minutes, like there's this random snippet that like is exactly kind of copy paste German thing, and then it's funny. Anyway, what's my point? My point is still a lot of demand for this, and dubbing definitely an option with all of these international streaming shows that are up now. Cool. All right, so I'm gonna go and ask Slater Answers a lot of the important questions of life now and see what it says.
Do it.
Bye-bye.
See ya.